The second of the seven disciplines from the book, The Power of Seven Personal Financial Disciplines, is estate planning. Estate planning is really nothing more than what do we have and where do we want it to go? And really, how do we want those that are someday going to receive the distribution of our estate, how do we want them to receive it? You know, typically, people will start with a very simple, a basic I love you will. If I die, everything is supposed to go to my wife. If she dies, everything was supposed to go to me. If we both die, everything is supposed to go to the children. The complication with a will is that it must go through probate court before the assets then can actually be distributed out to the rightful heirs. The word probate in Latin simply means to prove. So someone has to prove that this is the rightful distribution of the estate. Sometimes people will, draft this will thinking that it's going to take care of those issues. But it really is more of just a letter to the judge saying, here's what my loved one wanted done. If you take, for instance, your home, your car, your savings, all of your assets, I'll just call it all of your stuff, you're really just trying to get out all of that stuff passed on to your heirs, to your rightful heirs. Again, the problem with the will is it's got to go through the probate process before it ever gets there. You know, the one thing that could be worse than that is dying even without a will. So then you're basically at the mercy of your state in terms of its eventual distribution. You realize also that often the courts will simply say, then we're going to give half to the spouse and half to the children. And that might not have been what you wanted to accomplish. So when we're trying to avoid this entire probate process, people will often search for certain tools. At times, a trust can be appropriate depending on your current situation. Sometimes people will place assets in joint tenancy with rights of survivorship. So in other words, they will put their name and their spouse's name on a particular asset, for instance, the home, and they think that just takes care of that. Well, if all of a sudden, let's say dad becomes ill, he becomes incapacitated, then that spouse can't just go sell the property, not without going through a process called living probate, where they have to be appointed as the conservator, possibly even the guardian of that individual in order to be able to make that transition, that transaction. Whereas if the asset were held, for instance, in trust, the surviving trustee, the healthy trustee even, can continue right on managing with the power of the pen. So if you walk through that scenario, you might get past the first death with an asset being held in joint tenants with rights of survivorship because it then would ultimately go to the spouse. But the complication occurred because there was a long-term illness that we weren't expecting that our spouse suffered through, and we were unable to take care of the issues that needed to be handled. A trust would resolve that issue, enabling you with the power of the pen as a trustee. If we give dad a promotion, let's say he dies, goes on to heaven, and then you turn around and you add, for instance, one of the adult children as a joint tenant. Sometimes people do that mistakenly, but they do that. There's a couple of things that's happened. First, you just created a gift of half of that asset. So if you added your adult child to the deed of your property, then what's the value of that? You probably just exceeded the current gift tax exemption amount. So they go, oops, sometimes that's a mistake. Let's give it back to the spouse, give it back to their mom, for instance, creating the second gift. So you can almost shoot yourself in the foot twice there. Another thing that happens, we did not know that the adult child had MasterCard mania. There could be credit issues there. If you ever add those adult children to your property, then their potential creditors can now encumber your property. That's probably not something you would want to do. We didn't realize, too, that maybe the child would be involved in an accident where there, a vehicular accident where there was a fatality in the other automobile. It wasn't even our child's fault. But if they are drawn into that lawsuit, and in this day and age, that's highly likely, then we've encumbered our asset because we added them as a joint tenant. Another thing, we can't fully avoid the federal estate tax issue if we have not eliminated that tie, you might say, or if we're holding it in joint tenants, we've lost our federal estate tax exemption amount because we had not planned in advance. If we plan ahead, we can capture both a husband and a spouse's federal estate tax exemption amount. And the last thing I'll touch on regarding complications with joint tenancy is the fact that if you gift an asset, for instance, to your child in advance of your death, and let's suppose it had a cost basis of $30,000, a piece of real estate, but today it's worth $100,000, then there's a $70,000 capital gain there that someone's going to have to pay the capital gains tax on because you gifted it in advance. If we could wait, let the child inherit that asset at the time of our passing, then they can get a full step up in that cost basis. So those are some of the potential complications of what I call living probate issues. Most people just think of probate as a death issue that's going to take place someday after death, but you can see there's various complications that occur on both sides. At the time of death, there's things like the emotional stress, the fact that there's so many elements that need to be handled at that time. It can be a very costly thing. Some states have both statutory fees and reasonable charges that the legal community can assess in that capacity. And in order to avoid that, an alternative might be to create a revocable living trust. A revocable, you can revoke it, you can amend it, you can change it. Title the assets into that trust. When the jaws of probate, I call it squeeze on those assets, the assets then will go directly to the heirs without having to go through that probate process. You know, there are a few things that will automatically bypass probate by contract. For instance, your life insurance policy, they have beneficiary designations. Your IRA, 401k accounts have beneficiary designations. POD designations from the bank. An annuity, for instance, can bypass probate by contract. So beneficiary designations are very important. You want to check those, make sure someone didn't get lazy and just write the word estate on the beneficiary line. It should have a specific individual or the trust itself designated in that beneficiary capacity. If we are deceased and our spouse survives us and they're headed down the road of life, and all of a sudden they fall in love again, I would expect my wife to remarry at this point in my life if I died today. But I would not want her next spouse's children to inherit the entire estate and our kids be left out in the cold. So a trust will allow you the privilege of structuring a plan that secures your line of succession. It protects you, it protects your children, and going forward. So it's a great tool from that standpoint. It also then enables that spouse to capture both, as I mentioned, of the federal estate tax exemption amounts, and that helps minimize the entire tax impact. So we feel that it's a very viable tool that could possibly be of benefit to you.